Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Center Point. I am your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'm eager to introduce our very special guest, my good friend, Dr. Moshe Torim. Hello, Moshe.
Hello, Ron.
Let me tell the audience a little bit about you. We've known each other, I think, for 20-plus years already. Dr. Torim is a senior psychiatrist and psychotherapist with special training in psychosomatic medicine. He is a Distinguished Life Fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and a Life Fellow and former president of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. He's also a professor of psychiatry at Northeast Ohio Medical University and former chair of psychiatry at the same institution, I believe, and the former chair of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Akron General Medical Center. Dr. Torim has published numerous articles and books, chapters in the field of psychiatry, psychotherapy, guided imagery, mind-body integrative medicine, hypnosis, and behavioral sciences. He is certified by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology and has many years of experience in clinical work. So you have an amazing resume, Moshe, and I'm wondering if we could start off. I love hearing how people got into the medical field. Why did you decide to become a doctor?
I guess I would ask the question is, how did you become a doctor, or how did you decide to become a doctor? Well, it's a very interesting question. I was asked that in my interview process to be accepted to medical school. And they asked me, how old were you when you decided to become a physician? And I said, I was 8 years old. So when I was 8, I said to myself, yes, this is it. That's what I want to do. And how did this happen? I guess combination of factors, stories from my mother. My mother was an incredible storyteller. So she told me all kinds of stories about her childhood. And one of the stories that captivated me was a story that she told me about her own great-grandmother that she considered a healer, a true healer. And the story was like this. My mother had a younger brother who one day was playing in the, I guess, in the fields in the yard, and he got injured with a nail, a rusted nail. And the process that developed, he developed a severe infection in his foot, and from the foot it went up his leg, from the knee up to his thigh. All, you know, infected with open wounds and pus and so on. And the doctors couldn't help, you know, I'm talking about the 1920s. And I guess there were no antibiotics, as you know, and she took him to a big medical center in Warsaw, Poland, and there the doctors examined him with all the experts of all kinds, and they said the only way to save his life is to amputate his leg way above the knee. And my grandmother, that's my mother's mother, said, no way, I'm not going to let my son to get amputated at such a young age. And she took him back to their small town in Poland. And there she went to her grandmother and said, what did we do? And was crying and was very upset. And the grandmother said, show me what's going on. So she showed her the leg, and the her grandmother now, who is my mother's great-grandmother, said to her, you know what? I will heal him with the help of the Almighty. And she prayed over him, and then she said this. I want, give me soap and water. She washed his leg with soap and warm water. And then she said, bring me diapers, clean diapers that have never been used, baby diapers. And then she said, go to the, to the farm and get me fresh-made yogurt. And she said, the mother, my mother's mother, my grandmother did that. And she put the diapers into the yogurt and then put the diapers on his leg, his foot, leg, and up to the thigh, and then had him sit in the sun. And when the diapers got all dried up, she took them off and put a fresh new layer of diapers dunked in yogurt. And guess what happened, Rand? You want to guess? The whole
situation got better.
Cleared up. It was cleared up, and I had the great honor when I came to the United States. This is my mother's brother. His name was Joseph or Joe. They called him here Joe, Joseph Joe, Uncle Joe. And I said, show me your leg. And he told me the whole story, confirmed that he showed me his leg. There were some scars there, but he didn't get amputated. He got healed. So that story is just one interesting story that got me to say, wow, I want to know about that kind of stuff. And my mother told me additional stories similar to that in different variations. So she was an incredible storyteller and told me about other members of the family and other people and what they did. And many of these stories had to do with, I guess, sort of, if you wish, spiritual healings that took place, okay, with prayers and other ways. And that got me very intrigued. I said, I want to do that kind of stuff. But I want to be a physician to be able to also take care of people using the more modern and, scientific ways of helping in the healing process.
Wow, I'm so glad I asked the question. I've known you 2 decades and never heard this story before. So see what you learn on Centerpoint Radio Show. So maybe the next question is kind of obvious, but how did you decide to go into the field of psychiatry once you became a physician?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. How did I make that decision? Well, when I graduated from medical school, I did a rotating internship. So that was 2 months medicine, 2 months surgery, 2 months OBGYN, 2 months pediatrics, and 1 month emergency medicine. You get a picture, rotating internship. When I graduated from that, I got a license to practice that was in Israel. And I then worked as a general practitioner. I worked in a rural area, okay, and took care of all kinds of conditions. And the interesting part of that, I worked for an HMO. In Israel, they call it Kupat Kuli. And the HMO was run, of course, by administrators. And anytime I came in to see patients, there was already a big, group sitting in a waiting room. And the administrator was in charge of when to open the clinic and then when to close it. You had to adhere to that time. And I had a nurse that worked with me. And when I saw patients wanted to tell me their stories about what happened and how did they get sick. And I would ask them, and how are you going to get well? What do you expect to happen that you're going to get well? And they wanted to answer my questions and tell me their stories. And guess what happened as a result of that? It took too much time with each patient. And every time I would get a knock on the door and say, Dr. Thorne, why does it take you so long? There's a long line of people here. You got to go faster. And so I found out, to make a long story short, that I was very intrigued and interested in their stories. There were all kinds of stories. There were stories about people that had, as an example, low back pain that no specialist couldn't help. X-rays were normal. They went to orthopedic surgeons and others and so on. And so the question is, how do you help them? And so on. What do you do about it? And I would engage the patient with these questions. And they were very interested in telling me, you know, how do they see the way of getting well and getting better? So to make a long story short, I then asked myself, what specialty can I spend a whole hour with a patient and nobody's going to knock on my door and tell me if I'm too slow? And the only specialty I found out that was possible is psychiatry. It was legitimate to spend an hour with a patient, and that was okay. And so that's how I got into psychiatry.
Love the story. Now, you know, it's funny you said that they knocked on your door, you're taking too long. Last week I interviewed Dr. Harvey Zarin, who takes 6 hours with a new patient routinely.
Yeah, you can do that if you don't work for an HMO. Remember, I was not self-employed, and I was not working in a private practice situation. I was working for an HMO, where you had only limited time to spend with each patient, and if you didn't do it, they would lock the clinic and chase everyone else out.
Yeah. So it went into psychiatry. Now, when I did my psychiatric rotations in medical school, a lot of the patients were very psychiatrically disturbed, and we saw few medical patients who could benefit from a psychiatric intervention. How was your experience in specializing in psychiatry? Did you have an opportunity to work with, quote-unquote, neurotypical or patients who aren't very affected and yet could benefit from a psychological / psychiatric approach?
I was not too excited about psychiatry when I was a medical student because, you know, the experience they give you is only inpatient psychiatry. And the sickest and most disturbed and psychotic people. And that was not very enticing for me in that sense. So if you had asked me that question when I was a medical student, I probably wouldn't have said to you, yeah, I want to be a psychiatrist. I don't think so. You know, the experience is very, what is the word I'm going to say, slanted because of the inpatient setting in which you get the psychiatric experience. That's what happened to me anyway. And I think at the present time, excuse me, at the present time, it continues to be that way. Even though most of psychiatry is practiced in an outpatient setting, medical students still don't get to experience the outpatient setting of psychiatry, but rather the inpatient setting. Why? Because it's easier to administer and run it. And that continues to be the case, unfortunately.
So take us through, because I was never exposed in my training to outpatient psychiatry. Take us through, what do they look like?
Well, outpatient psychiatry I only experienced when I was doing my psychiatry residency. That's when I had a chance to do it and observe, of course, and experience attending psychiatrists in a session with a patient. I was able to sit in and watch and observe and see what happened. But before I did my psychiatry residency, I didn't have any outpatient psychiatry experience. I only heard stories from some psychiatrists about what they do and how they do it, but I never had a chance to sit there and observe it. So only in the psychiatry residency, that's when I had that experience, and I liked it a lot. I could form a bond, a connection with the patient. I was able to listen. I wanted to understand them. I wanted to make sure that they felt they have been listened to and they have been understood by me, and also to feel that I actually care about them as a person, not just, quote, the diagnosis of whatever illness or disease they had. but rather them as a whole person. So I would start with sessions such as saying, well, tell me about yourself, or tell me your story, instead of saying, like, why are you here, or what brings you here. I learned it from my, my teachers, not to say not to start those questions, but rather say, tell me your story, or tell me more about yourself, or something like that. And wanting to get to know them as a person. I remember seeing a sign that one of my supervisors was wearing, which said, quote, treat the person, not the illness, quote unquote. That intrigued me very much.
Makes a lot of sense. And I approach patients similarly. However, I noticed in medicine over the last 3 to 4 decades, I will call it devolution of medicine, as we have been given less time even in traditional medicine. When I first started pulmonary medicine, I would take 45 minutes with a complicated patient. By the time I finished and I left the traditional medical field, they were allowed 15 minutes per patient. And my impression is psychiatrists have also worked under such a yoke. Is that true?
Well, it depends. If you are signed up as, quote, a preferred provider, as they call it, with insurance companies, and then you become a slave to the contract you sign with the insurance company. And, you know, in one of my situations, you know, after I graduated from my residency and I had that limited private practice, the story was that the insurance company would not approve to pay for me doing psychotherapy, even though they say we're not going to pay you for psychotherapy. We're only going to pay you for doing evaluations and medication management. And I say, and what about psychotherapy? I say, well, we have our social workers going to do that. You don't need to do that. We need you to do the manage medications and do diagnostic evaluation. So after I figured that out, I said, I don't want to be a slave to the insurance companies. I'll do what's best for my patients. But, you know, that's a process that you figure it out. You know, we don't want to spend too much time about what happened to American medicine and how people have become, you know, basically, I hear it from a lot of physicians today, that they can't really practice medicine that's focused on healing, on helping patients heal and get well, but rather, making a quick diagnosis, sending, of course, for lots of different tests, because the company they work for gets paid more for more testing and more testing and more testing. But if you spend an hour with a patient, the corporation that employs you doesn't get paid very much for that compared to all the testing that you can send for and do. So, you know, we don't want to go there too much, but I'll just tell a very brief, you know, humoristic story. I was watching a clinical case conference with a resident presenting the case, and there were three great, you know, teachers, experts, professors, and so on, listening to all this. And one of them was leading the clinical case conference, and he said the question, what is the correct and the best diagnosis in this case? And different people stood up and, you know, and gave their opinion, and she said, no. So I said, so what is it? And you know what he said? Quote, the reimbursable diagnosis is the best diagnosis for this patient. Unquote. You get the idea.
Bad.
I hear him. Yeah, he said it jokingly, but it represents what we just talked about before. The reimbursable diagnosis. So a good example is this. Okay. As you know, a lot of people come to us with some anxiety, insomnia, sadness, crying spells, and so on. And when you listen to them, you figure out that they are actually in a state of mourning. They are in a state of grief, okay? And they need help. But if you write grief, grief is not reimbursable because it's not considered a medical disease. So insurance companies do not reimburse any treatment for anyone who is experiencing grief. Even though they are crying and they feel sad and so on, no, grief does not deserve coverage because it's not a disease. You get the idea, Ran, right? So many people who come in with grief get the diagnosis of depression, even though they don't have depression. But depression is a reimbursable diagnosis, and grief is not. Just a little example.
Illuminating, but sad.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned...
Sad, absolutely.
You mentioned depression, and in the next segment, I want to... You've written a lot about depression and how to approach it, and the field of depression treatment has evolved in the last couple of decades. So I want to ask your opinion about various ways of approaching depression. I also want to talk to you about masked depression, which is an interesting entity that has overlapped with other parts of psychiatry, including psychosomatization and conversion disorder.
Yeah.
So we'll come right back after these messages. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Anbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Anbar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Anbar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, a special guest, my friend, Dr. Moshe Toim. We were going to talk about depression. How prevalent is depression these days?
Well, I don't have in front of me statistics, but I can tell you very prevalent in the sense that lots and lots of people, unfortunately, are experiencing states of depression. Depression is a disease, and yes, it's a big problem. It interferes with their work, with their lifestyle, with their medical conditions. For example, we know now from repeated studies that have been done that show that a person who gets an acute MI, a heart attack, and is also suffering from depression, his or her chances of recovery are significantly lower than the person who is not suffering from depression. Same thing goes, for example, for somebody who goes through a coronary bypass surgery. So, as you know, patients before the surgery get a whole bunch of evaluations, you know, blood tests and urine tests and x-rays and so on and so on, chest x-rays and blood pressure and pulse ox and a whole bunch of stuff, and EKGs, of course, and so on. One of the most important things that they don't get in many cases is to find out whether they're depressed or not. And why is that? Because people who are recovering from coronary bypass surgery and they are entering into it in a state of depression, guess what? Their chances of recovery are significantly lower. They have more complications, including pulmonary embolisms and a whole bunch of other stuff, and some of them end up in, unfortunately, the mortality rate is higher because of that. So this is just quickly, and these are two examples to show how important that is, because it contributes, the presence of depression as an illness contributes to greater complications and also for medical conditions, and also reduces the chances of healing and recovery, and increases the risk of all kinds of complications after surgery, if we're talking about surgery as treatment. And the work, I'll just quote one, is one of the people who was my mentor when I did my fellowship in psychosomatic medicine. It was Dr. George Engel, and he, with his associates, Dr. Schmali and others there at the University of Rochester School of Medicine, identified a state that they called a state of helplessness and hopelessness, giving up and given up. Given up, they mean they have given up the hope that they will get better. And many of these people start having thoughts about wishing they could go to sleep and not wake up in the morning. And that state of mind, which they called helplessness, hopelessness, giving up, given up, they identified as being a state of mind where a person is much at a higher risk of developing a medical illness or disease, such as malignant diseases, chronic, you know, pulmonary diseases. Since you specialized in pulmonary medicine, you know about such diseases as COPD and asthma, as an example, and pulmonary fibrosis, and a whole bunch of others and so on, just to mention pulmonary diseases. But Dr. Engel and his associates talk about all diseases, all kinds of diseases, including, by the way, cardiovascular disease, an acute MI. You know, the issue of timing. Why does a person develop an acute MI at a certain day and a certain time? That's one of the items or issues that Dr. Engel and his associates were researching, and they also taught us to ask the question for ourselves, why now? How does it happen that now is the time that that person developed that disease, whatever it was?
So these are wonderful, wonderful is the right word. These are many examples of the mind-body connection, how the mind does affects outcome. What's the mechanism? How does being depressed make you more prone to heart attack?
Well, that's a very good question. At the time when I did my fellowship, the only hypothesis about that, but we have more, I guess, scientific data pointing in that direction, such as, you know, the limbic system affecting the autonomic nervous system, changes in certain neurotransmitters at the time of severe stress. An example would be like, you know, that state which is called fight or flight condition, you know, which we know now increases significantly the amount of norepinephrine and epinephrine, basically adrenaline, noradrenaline, in that state, which is secreted in part by the brain, but also in part by the adrenal glands. In that state of mind, blood pressure goes up, heart rate goes a lot faster, as we both know, tachycardia, okay? And if you have a person who has already partially, if you wish, clogged coronary arteries, not completely, but partially, and if you have a heart that's running at 120, you know, times a minute instead of 70 times a minute, that significantly could contribute to an acute MI. Other things we know, that changes in the stickiness of platelets. We know now that the stickiness in platelets goes up in states of stress. And that also could contribute to a state of an acute MI, in other words, a heart attack. And there are, so it has to do with hormones, neurotransmitters, that affect blood pressure, affect heart rate, affect stickiness of platelets, and they also affect the immune system, as you know. I think I sent you, either an article or a copy of a book chapter about autoimmune disorders and how the immune system is affected by states of mind, either states of depression, states of anxiety, and so on. And the whole new field, new in the sense for about, 30 years ago or so, that's been started to be studied more and more, called psychoneuroimmunology. I am sure you heard about that. And one of the guys that contributed to more research in the field was Dr. Robert Ader, A-D-E-R, who did these experiments at the University of Rochester School of Medicine then in the Department of Psychiatry, together with a immunologist, Dr. Nicholas Cohen. And together they showed a very interesting mechanism, since you asked me about mechanisms, conditioning. In other words, conditioning of the immune system, either suppression of the immune system or the opposite, enhancement of the immune response. And one of the mechanisms they were able to prove is classical conditioning, which has also been called Pavlovian conditioning.
Exactly. So you can actually manipulate the patient's classical conditioning, perhaps, which I'd like to talk more about in the next segment, to help heal them. And what you're telling us is that people with clinical depression and psychiatric problems are more prone to physical disease. And this, so it's not just when you treat them, we're not just helping their mental state, we're helping their life as a whole.
Absolutely. Their overall health. Absolutely. Yes,
so we come back. I want to ask you how you would approach treating a patient with depression. Maybe they're going to undergo an elective surgery, but they're at higher risk because of their mental state. I'm wondering how you would approach helping them. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, a special guest, Dr. Moshe Tolem, who's telling us about the effects of depression. So I'm wondering, how do you treat it? Somebody is going to have an elective surgery. They want to help get their mind in a good place. What would you do for that such a patient?
Oh, that's an excellent question. First, I would find out what did they see the outcome of the surgery? What is their understanding of the surgery? And what did they see as the outcome? And they say to me, well, what do you mean? I say, well, if you wish, I'd like to help you by asking a very important question. And I wonder if you could take a moment to reflect on this question. And a lot of my patients, when I ask this question, as they reflect, some of them have their eyelids closed. And even if the eyelids flutter a little bit, they end up closing. And they focus inside, and then they respond to my question. So if that happens to you, I just want to tell you in advance that that's okay. But if you don't want to have your eyelids closed, that's okay if they don't close. And then, in many cases, many of my patients, the eyelids flutter and they start to close and they stay closed. And then the question I ask is something like this. There may be a part within your brain, some people call it the subconscious mind, others call it the center of wisdom. There are others that call it something else. But that center of wisdom, that center of the subconscious mind may have some additional important knowledge and wisdom that could help us in this process. Let's call the patient's first name Joe, okay? That would help Joe and help me figure it out together how Joe can be best helped. So, could you please let me know from your perspective, from the center core, the subconscious mind, what additional knowledge do I need to hear and know to help Joe best? And in many patients, they start talking. So just as an example, one patient said to me, well, you just asked the question about surgery, as an example, okay? Dr. Torum, he is not ready for surgery. He believes that this surgery is going to kill him, that he's going to die. And I don't think he should go and have a surgery now. And then I say, go on, I'm listening. I think you ought to help him first, get his will to live first. He has given up on life now. And I say, go on, I'm listening. And then they tell me all kinds of stories. One story was, well, he feels that his children have abandoned him. His wife doesn't care about him anymore. She's all involved with her gambling habit, that she spends a lot of time in that. He feels that his friends don't care about him. He has given up on life, and he is actually looking forward to die because for him, death is reaching a state of peace. he's not going to be bothered and he's not going to be suffering anymore. So if we want to help him, we have to get him out of this state of mind and get him to a point where he's going to want to live again. And that's when he will be ready for the surgery. Quote, unquote. I'm just giving you an example of actually stuff I heard. Okay? Another example. A patient was sent to me because he was extremely obese, like, you know, 80 pounds overweight, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol levels, already with a history of one acute MI and bypass surgery, and now the vein that was used to do the bypass has clogged significantly, not totally, but significantly, and he was either going to have stents put in or going to have another bypass that many surgeons call a redo, quote-unquote. So I asked him a question similarly to what I just gave the example, and his answer was, quote, Dr. Torum, you have to get him to talk about his marriage. And I said, go on, I'm listening. You know, he is married to a woman that is a bitch. She is torturing him constantly with her criticism of him. Everything he does is no good. And he went on and on and on talking about how dysfunctional and difficult his marriage is, and basically telling me to get, we'll call him Joe again, to get Joe to talk about his marital life and his relationship with his wife in order to actually get going on helping him as a whole person. So on a regular interview, I wouldn't be able to hear stuff like this. So I learned that to ask questions on a deeper level, and in many cases, I would get all kinds of interesting answers that opened up a new perspective of exploring what's going on with that individual. Do you want to say something about it, Ron?
No, it is similar to the kind of work that I do, and illustrates how when we listen to ourselves, we can actually get a lot of wisdom that doesn't come to the forefront until we listen.
Yes. And by the way, and this is done without formal hypnosis, quote unquote. Okay? Without formal hypnosis, when I say formal hypnosis, I'm talking about, quote, a formal induction and a formal, you know, quote, guiding the person out of the state of hypnotic trance. So no formal hypnosis is done in this specific procedure I just mentioned.
Yes, and you're playing a very important role by listening and saying, go on. Such an important role in this interaction.
Yes, go on. Tell me more. I'm listening. I'm hearing you. Go on. And then many times I would ask, and how do you see recovery is going to happen here? And I also ask this question of a patient before I get to the subconscious mind by asking, okay, let's suppose, okay, you go through a surgery. Could you please share with me what do you see happening after the surgery, like a month after the surgery, and then I go like 3 months after the surgery. What is life like? And one of the patients said to me, closed his eyes, and you know what he said? Quote, I'm standing in the cemetery in front of a tombstone. And I said, what do you see on the tombstone? And he mentioned that his name was carved on the tombstone, and mentioning the year he was born and the year he died. In other words, he didn't see life going on for him after the surgery. After the surgery is death. Ran, are you still there?
Yes.
Obviously, the message is this person is not ready for surgery.
How did you
we
help
have
him?
To postpone it if this is elective surgery, especially. I'm not talking about acute, you know, emergency surgeries. I'm talking about elective surgery.
And did you help him? Did you prepare him for surgery?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I spoke with his surgeon, who was primary care physician. I explained to them the situation, and of course, using somewhat different words, and asked them if it's okay to postpone the surgery, since the selective surgery, when we get him to the point that he's going to be ready, not just physically, but also mentally, for this surgery, to have a more positive state of mind and so on, something like that. And they were willing to accept that and went along with it.
What a marvelous demonstration of the importance of psychological care as part of medical care.
Yes.
We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. A very special guest, Dr. Moshe Torim, who has instructed us about psychiatry, about depression, about the mind-body connection. And in this last segment, Dr. Torim, we like to give the listening audience some tips they can use in their life today. And I know you have some essential ideas about what people can do to stay, become well and stay well. Please share us. What can we do?
Okay. So going back to the issue of depression, one of the most important elements in recovering from depression is, of course, in states of depression, many people feel a state of helplessness and futurelessness, quote unquote. So a very important element in getting well and helping them to get well is to restore hope. So restoration of hope is a very, very important element. So, you know, articles I've written about, book chapters, talk about, reviewing the whole concept of hope, hopelessness, and restoration of hope. So one of the techniques, or the approaches I use, I ask the person, you have had other conditions in the past. Some people had the flu, of course. Many people had the flu. Some had pneumonia. Some had asthma. Some had other diseases for which they have recovered. And I ask them, is focusing on how have you recovered? What do you think is going to take to help you to get well again. And I listen to them. And I listen to them also on a subconscious level, as the examples I gave. All right. So I basically invite the person to become a partner in the process of making the diagnosis, like what is not right in their life now, and also engaging them in contributing to the ideas of what is it going to take, what shall we focus on in helping them to get well again. And I listen to that very, very carefully. And all kinds of stuff comes up when you invite the person to do that, to become a part, an active participant. And I even invite people to be an active participant in choosing an antidepressant medication, if that's one of the things we are going to use. And I listen. And some of them, you know, actually are willing to tell me. I say, how did you decide that you think that tofurnil is going to help you? And they say, well, my mother had also depression, and she took tofurnil, and that was very good for her and effective for her. And I say, and what else? And I said, yeah, and my uncle, my mother's brother, also had depression, and he took tofurnil, and it helped him too. And I said, what does that mean? Well, doctor, I believe tofurnil is going to help me too, and I think I'd like to try that first. Okay, just as an example, all right? So even with medications, I invite the person to be a participant in the process. So in terms of getting well and staying well, there's so much to say about that. You know, there's nutrition, a sense of connection, a sense of feeling that your life has meaning in it, and your life is worth living. So one of the questions I explore with people is the question is, every day that you get up in the morning, and as life goes on, what makes you feel that your life is worth living? What gives meaning to your life that you feel that your life is not being wasted, and that you have a feeling that your life is not only worth living, but has special meaning for you and helps you to get going and keep going and so on? So that enters into a whole realm of, if you wish, spirituality as well. And so, basically, you know, I have the principle which is called everything is grist for the mill, which means every subject is okay to talk about, even religion, even your faith in God, or questioning your faith in God. Whatever it is, it's okay to talk about. I will listen, and I'll do the best to understand you. So, jumping quickly, you know, being aware of the limited time we have, is over the years that I've been in practice, I have had many people that have gotten well, and, you know, we reached the point of reducing the frequency of the appointments and the visits and so on. And I would ask the question is, now that you reflect back, what are the important elements you feel that were helpful to you in your process of recovery and getting well? And I am going to mention four elements here that I have learned from my patients over the years. So one element is when a patient leaves the first session with me, they want to feel, quote, I have been listened to. Element two, I have been understood, or I know Dr. Torm is making an effort to understand me. Better, I feel understood. So I feel I've been listened to. I feel I've been understood. Element number three, I believe Dr. Torm cares about me as a person. He wants to know who I am, where I came from, where did I grow up, how did I come to be the way I am today, and so on. So that's element number three. Dr. Torm cares about me as a person. Element number four, Dr. Torm has the knowledge, the skills of helping me and working with me and helping me to get well. So these are the four elements I would summarize that are very important in helping people to get well. Notice that I'm not talking much about, quote, the diagnosis of the disease here, because I believe strongly in treating the person, not just the disease. Of course, if you treat the whole person, the disease is included in it. But it's not, a person is not a disease. So I have had many patients that will come in and say to me something like this, quote, Dr. Torm, I'm bipolar. And over the process of helping me to get well, when they got better, significantly better, they wouldn't say anymore, Dr. Thorne, I am bipolar. Oh, I know I am not a disease, quote unquote. That was work we did in helping them understand that bipolar is not a disease that you are. You are not the disease. You are a person. You may be a man, a woman, you know, a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a son, a daughter, and on, okay, a grandparent, an American, and so on. But you are not the disease. So you may say, all those things, I am, I am, I am. But when it comes to bipolar disorder, you may say, and I have a bipolar disorder, but you don't say, I am bipolar. The same thing is with asthma. I am not asthmatic. I'm sure you had patients that would say, I'm diabetic, I'm asthmatic, and so on and so forth. In other words, people over-identify with the disease, and by doing so, they are impeding their chances of getting well. So this, these are just quick, so to speak, you know, examples of one of the things I, of some of the things I focus on with people in helping them to get well.
It
go ahead,
Ron,
say something.
The four elements you mentioned, listening to your patient, understanding your patient, working towards it, caring about them, and understand that you have the knowledge to help them, those are all elements of rapport. That's how we establish rapport, and I think
yes.
you described it beautifully.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Moshe, I really thank you for sharing some of your vast knowledge from past experiences. You know, we can talk for hours and hours. Unfortunately, our program is running up, but maybe we'll have another chance to talk another time.
Yes, yes. I'd love to talk to you at least one more time. I have so much I can share with you, and I would love to hear you share more things from you. So,
absolutely.
As you know, Ron, I would love that, Ron, to do it again, where we can focus more about some of the additional things that you and I have talked about in other settings.
Absolutely. Thank you again so much. I wish the whole audience a wonderful week. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Thank you, Ron.